Good afternoon, this is Read Me Something You Love. And it's a Sunday afternoon, and I'm sitting in my parents' house in South Harrow. And it's Mother's Day, so I thought it would be a nice day to get my mother to read me something she loves, even though she's got a bit of a croaky voice today, because she's recently had quite a bad spell of bronchitis. I was just thinking when I was walking here, I was trying to remember if I could remember you reading to me as a child. And I couldn't, but I presume you must have. You must have read to me.
Lots and lots.
Yeah, so what sort of stuff would you... Because I can remember listening... I can remember I used to love kind of going off and listening to... I had that little record player and I'd go and listen to...
Noddy.
Noddy and...
You were crazy about all Enid Blyton. In those days, Enid Blyton was quite the rage. And Noddy and Big Ears were one... I'm going back really to when you were three years old. And you loved Noddy and Big Ears. And you went through all the Enid Blytons. But you learned to read so quickly that really you read your own books after about 6 years old anyway. But we used to read a lot of Noddy, Big Ears. Gosh, I can't remember now. Because when it got to the Famous Five and the Secret Seven, you were reading those yourself.
Yeah.
I think whatever we found at the library. We used to go at the library.
Yeah.
In those days. Do you remember going to the library? We used to go at the library and you used to take out at least two books a week and devour them. And I started by reading to you. But as soon as you started reading yourself, then that was it. You just read yourself.
So when was the last time that you would have actually have read me something?
I used to read to you when you were ill. So that carried on quite a long time. I remember when you had your tonsils out. You must have been about seven. You were very, very ill. And I remember reading to you then. You had the measles. I read to you. So that was more the thing. But I think more than the reading to you, it was the love of books that you got from me. Because the library was my favourite place. Mm-hmm. And one of the best things I loved was lying on the bed and reading. Either in the winters, and you used to do that. Do you remember that?
Yeah. And we are, I mean, another thing I often think about is how we, essentially the two of us, are kind of the readers of the family.
Yes.
We are the ones who do a lot of reading and who always have a book on us about our person. So that's also interesting that it's something that we have in common, but it doesn't seem to have sort of filtered into the rest of the family.
I think the love of books and the love of reading is either in you or not. I think a mother can foster it, but I think it's either in you or not. You can encourage children, but once it takes over, they either love it or they don't. But I remember lying and sunbathing, I always had a book. And when you were out in the garden, you always had a book. And whether you were sitting at a pool or wherever you were, wherever we went, when I went to the beach, other people sit on the beach and just watch the sea on holiday. I always sat and read a book, and so did you at my feet. Mm-hmm. So I think it was just something you loved so much. And it was a very big thing. You, me, and Mark, we used to lie on my big double bed and all read.
Mm.
Now, do you remember that?
Mm-hmm.
So reading was a very big thing in our days.
Mm. So you haven't read to me for about 33 years?
At least.
Something
a good
like that.
33 years.
So this is one, definitely one for the books, as it were. What are you going to read for us today?
I'm reading a book called No, I Don't Want to Join a Book Club by Virginia Ironside, and it is a diary of growing old disgracefully.
Uh-huh.
Do you want to know why I've chosen this book?
Please.
Because when I found this book in a bookshop, I was 59 and facing my 60th birthday, and she starts in her 59th year, or what she calls it, her 60th year, facing her 60th birthday. And it's just written with such humour and so wry and tongue-in-cheek, and I just find it so funny. And at that stage, I was facing my 60th birthday with a lot of trepidation, and I just loved, I love the way Virginia Ironside wrote the book. And you'll see there's a lot of humour about getting old, which tickled my fancy, I guess.
All right, well, shall we hear the first passage you've chosen?
Yes, let's. The older I get, the more of a loose cannon I become at dinner parties. 9 times out of 10, I can shine and be good fun. But the 10th, I start yelling about inappropriate things, like how great euthanasia or abortion is, or how wrong it is to give aid to Africa, and everyone gets frightfully hot under the collar and embarrassed. They say that this outspokenness is something to do with the synapses atrophying in the frontal lobes as you get older, but I think it's just the ludicrous confidence that comes with age. This time we got onto the subject, sparked off by Mrs. Glasses on Strings, revealing, as they so often do these days, that being 60, she had just received her freedom pass, and how wonderful it was travelling on public transport for nothing. I said I would be 60 in a few months, and I couldn't wait. Yes, said Mrs. Glasses on Strings, trying to ingratiate herself with me. You're only as old as you feel, 60 years young. 60, going on 20, said the therapist. I really can't agree, I said. If you're 60, you're 60. 60 is old, and I'm just longing to be old. I don't want to be told I'm young when I'm not. I'm fed up with being young. Boring. I was young in the 60s. Been there, got the T-shirt, worn it to death, and put it in the bag for age concern. When I was 20, 60 was old. When I was 30, 40, and 50, 60 was still old. I'm not going to change the goalposts now. I'm 60, said Marion, as she smilingly collected the plates. It's an odd fact that most men never realise when empty dishes are being stacked up. The therapist, who no doubt in his work prided himself on his acute sensitivity to other people's feelings, sat with his plate firmly in front of him, unaware that major operations were being carried out that required his cooperation. But I don't feel a day over 30. But Marion, don't you realise that's tragic, I said. To continue feeling 30 for the whole of your life. How boring. A nightmare. I'm longing to feel 60. What's wrong with that? The great thing about 60, said the therapist, whose wife had finally leaned over the table and taken his plate, is that it's never too late. You can do so many things. Take an open university degree, go bungee jumping, learn a new language. But it is too late, I argued. That's what's so great about being old. You no longer have to think about going to university or go bungee jumping. It's a huge release. I've been feeling guilty about not learning another language for most of my adult life. At last, I find that now, being old, I don't have to. There aren't enough years left to speak it. It'd be pointless. Well, I feel, said the therapist defiantly, that now I'm 65, anything is possible. I find, approaching 60, I replied, that the real pleasure is that so many things are impossible, I think, I added cruelly, putting my hand on his arm and smiling a great deal to pretend I meant no harm. That you're in what you therapists call denial. This time I got the laugh, but it was cheap and I felt ashamed. As I drove back, I was sorry for the poor old therapist, finding himself sitting next to rancid old me, felt really guilty and horrible, and wished I hadn't been so acid. Like me, the poor man probably would have far preferred to have sat next to a lovely young person instead.
You've got all of these different viewpoints and ideas about what being 60, turning 60 is like. I mean, in that passage, Which viewpoint do you side with? Who is speaking for you there?
Oh, I love her viewpoint. I absolutely love her viewpoint because when I was going towards 60, this was my conundrum. do you fling yourself into your 60s with this, now I can do all those things I didn't do before, with this, I'm young again, I've still got the energy to blah, 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 whatever it is? Or do you sit down and say, I am 60, I'm quite happy being 60, it's nice to be old, and quite honestly, why should I have to do all those things? Mm. And that spoke to me quite a lot at that stage. Because turning 60 was a very big event for me, and I liked the way she said, "No, it's okay to be 60 and be comfortable with being 60." Mm. So that I liked. That was really fun.
Why was it such a big event, turning 60?
We don't have very good longevity, and I was one of the first few to reach 60, and so it played a big part in my life because. A lot of people had died in my family in their 50s due to mainly cancer, heart problems, etc. And so when I was going towards, when I was young, I didn't think I'd make it to 60 because none of them had. So when I was going towards 60 in my 59th year, which is, as she argues in the book, your 60th year, it was a huge milestone for me. Huge Rubicon to be crossed and, I suppose, defeated in a way. So, yeah, so I think this book, the reason I like this book so much is because it came at the right time for me. I found it on the shelf, and as happens in one's life, it was the right book for me to read at that point. It just lightened my whole spirit about turning 60. A, I didn't have to keep up with the Joneses. I didn't have to be one of these 60-year-old women who power walked every day or went to the gym five times a week. But if I did want to, for example, study a new language or take up a new hobby, which I did in my 60s, then it was fine to do so because I still had the mental wherewithal and I was still young enough, in inverted commas, to do so. Because there's a lot of pressure about 60-year-olds being 60 now. 60 is the new 50. 60 is the time to retire and start living your life, traveling, finding a new husband if you haven't got one already, looking younger, etc., etc. And I just didn't see the point in all of that, and she makes that quite clear here. So I like that. Mm.
Shall we listen to the next bit?
Woke feeling absolutely terrible, all the thousand muscles in my face still trapped in a rictus of insincerity. Knew, even worse, that I would have to suffer this cramped feeling till the following morning when the poison of the ghastly evening had finally drained from my body. To make matters worse, I looked terrible. Last night before I went to the party, I saw in the mirror a raving beauty, with incredible olive skin, high cheekbones, a sensitive mouth, utterly ravishing. But when I glanced in the mirror this morning, I couldn't believe what stared back at me. I looked grotesque. Charles Lawton in a dressing gown. My face was like an uncooked doughnut. Piggy eyes, small, pursed, pale-lipped mouth, deep frown marks, all puff. Revolting. What is it that happens in the night? Clearly something. God knows what it is. Collects. Or perhaps more likely, it was the therapist, quite understandably, had put a curse on me. Jumped into the bath. Well, perhaps jump is not the word. Clambered into might be a better way of describing it. And yes, I do have a funny rubber mat with suckers underneath, lying on the bottom of my bath, and found that none of the rest of my body is puffy, just wrinkly, like an Austrian blind. I can see now my grandmother's arms sticking out of my shoulders, my skin becoming fine and papery and shiny like hers. As I loved her so much, I don't mind the sight. But cripes, I'm only 59. Soon I'll be 60, and I mean soon, in the next 3 months. Will everything collapse even further, I wonder? Even now, when I do my noble 10 minutes of yoga a day, I see small folds of skin waiting to tumble down my thighs. They're particularly in evidence when I do a shoulder stand with my legs in the air. They've got strange marks on them, thread veins, the odd hint of a varicose vein. My upper arms have wobbly bits hanging from them. The backs of my hands are speckled with brown spots. When did they appear? only a few years ago, I think, when I could pretend to myself, talk about denial, that I was about 30. Now my entire body is shrieking at me that I'm old. And what's so utterly strange is that I don't really mind a bit. It feels rather comfortable, friendly, and right. Okay, my skin's not young and springy, with that wonderful peachy bloom and a fuzz of fine downy hair, but it's still good, like an expensive but worn old leather sofa from a gentleman's club in Pall Mall. The older I get, I've decided, the more I am determined to look, not so much like some deserted, vandalised community hall in Hull, but more like a beautiful ruined abbey, or a good painting. When I got out of the bath and reached the towel, I remembered the time as a child I excitedly told my father that I had discovered a brilliant new way of drying myself. How? He had asked. I showed him. With the towel around my back, I took one corner in each hand. I then pulled on each end alternately. Isn't it a good method? I said. My father smiled indulgently. I remember when I discovered that around exactly your age, he said. It was the first moment in my life when I had the revelation, a revelation that I have again and again and again, that not only what I think is an original thought has been thought time and time again by people throughout the ages, but worse, that thoughts that I imagine are new to myself are often thoughts that I've had again and again throughout my own life. The treadmillness and groundhog dayery of it all is both depressing and oddly reassuring. It would be good, however, to have a brand new thought just once in one's life. I remember only recently realizing that you could hold two feelings in yourself at the same time, that you could both like someone and dislike them in one go, that you could both want a cigarette and want to give up smoking. As one sees life rather in black and white, strong hates and loves, I have always tried to compromise by seeing everything in a kind of grey. The trick is not to do that at all, but to manage to hold the contrasts in oneself at exactly the same time. That results in a much more lively and invigorating approach. Very late in the day to discover that thought, but it has made relationships with people far, far easier and oddly kinder. I then got dressed. Not an easy business these days. I think I used to balance on one foot when I put on my tights. Now I sit on the bed and roll back like a hedgehog as I tug them on, legs waggling in the air.
Hmm.
My reading is terrible.
Hmm?
My reading.
What about it?
I don't know. Mistakes. Keep making mistakes.
Sounds all right to me. So, when I look in the mirror, having not so just turned 40, I am still under the illusion that I can't really see a huge difference in myself, in how I look, from, say, when I was 20.
I must admit that until my 60th birthday, I still felt okay. It's the last, I'm 64 now, and it's the last 2 or 3 years where there are some days that I get quite a shock when I look in the mirror. I cannot believe how much I've aged, and I cannot believe the ways of age. I always hated chicken necks and double chins, and I always swore I wouldn't have one, and I do have one now. And this, as she says, puffy, and everything's pulls down and hangs down. And yet there are some times in the day that I go and look in the mirror and I think, you look all right. You actually don't look much more than 50. However, let me say, I'm not obsessed by my age. I don't go and look in the mirror and think, oh my God, you look 64 today. You shouldn't look 64 today. Not at all. It doesn't bother me at all. But at 59, I still used to look in the mirror and think I look quite good for my age. Yes, so what you're experiencing is very normal. And certainly when I got to 40 and in my 40s, people used to tell me I looked a lot younger, and I always felt a lot younger. But no matter how much I look in the mirror and see my old age, that feels okay. It's this thing of holding two thoughts in the contrast in your mind. My dither or my contrasts are I look in the mirror and I see the 64-year-old woman, but in my head I'm still 24, or call it 34, because 24 I really was, very stupid. That is still, as young people say, blows me away. It still blows me away because I cannot equate these two things. I see these, I have these two completely different feelings of who I am in a way.
Because, I mean, you say that, okay, you are, because she uses this word comfortable, doesn't she? You're comfortable with who you are. But I do, I mean, she talks about, at the age of 59, still doing shoulder stands and things like that. Now, because I obviously know you very well, I know that you are, and probably many other 60-year-olds, you're not capable of doing a shoulder stand because you've had back operations and all sorts of operations. And sort of part of me thinks, well, she is still getting away with imagining that decay hasn't set in, whereas you haven't been able to do that.
No, that was cut short for me in my mid-50s. But I do like to think, and I do know that at 59, I was a lot fitter and more able to do things than I am at 64. So 59 to 64 there's been a huge decline, so to speak, in everything that I can do and do. But I do think that 59, you look at your 60s in a completely different way to what you do when you're 61. Maybe you do that when you're 39. You look at your 40s differently to what you do when you're 41. Do you know what I mean? I think that's just, what they say, the wrong side of 40 or whatever they say. So I think that you do look at things in a completely different way. But I think for me, arriving at 60 was very much this thing of how was I going to do it, because I didn't have aging parents. I wasn't in the situation you're in, being 40 with a parent. My mother died, I was 33, and my father was 34, going on 35. So I don't have aging parents. I didn't have somebody to look at and see, well, that's how you behave at 60 or 64 or 65. In our previous house, I had a neighbour who was 75, and I thought she was remarkable, because she was driving and going here and playing bowls and doing this and doing that. And yet to look at her, she was frail and bent over, but she had this incredible spirit. So in that way, I looked at her and thought, gosh, I want to be like you, certainly when I'm 75. So it was a big thing for me. As I said, it was a big thing for me to get to 60, because I had no clue how I was going to. And now that I am here, I realize that you do it like you do everything else in your life, day by day and step by step. And you just have this incredible, this wisdom thing they talk about. I love that. So I do love, my 60s are one of my favorite decades. I'm loving being 60. And part of that is this whole wisdom thing, where you can stop yourself in your tracks and say, stop feeling angry, or stop doing that, or let's get on with things, or what will be, or this will pass, and mean it. And those things really, really are important to you, and you believe them, and they're true. Mm-hmm. Whereas when you're 40 and, or 30 or 20, and your mother says, you know, all things good and bad do pass, nothing lasts, you think, what's she talking about? This is awful, it's going to last forever. When you look at something from your 60, with your 60s eyes, you know that she was right. So I like that a lot. I like the wisdom that comes with being 60.
Mm.
Some things I don't like. One of them is the more frailty, the feeling that you're out there and you see kids coming towards you on their bicycles and on skateboards, and, you know, or flinging their rucksacks around, or flinging their arms around, or you know they've been drinking, and it's quite worrying to know that you're in their path and you're not strong if somebody were to, you know, push you or jostle you or whatever. So I don't like that at all. But yeah, mostly I'm quite happy.